fantasy, sports, and politics.
Talk smack, you in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics. Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, Mr. FSPTU proudly presents Fantasy Sports and Politics Saturday edition. Well, for now, it's just me. It's just me, Mr. FSP. What I want to tell you is that got a great show lined up for you. We're going to discuss some of the headlines going on in sports today, but my main focus will be recapping what took place during the Super Bowl, which I correctly predicted, as well as correctly predicting how it would take place. Unlike somebody that claims they don't want to be anything but Mr. FSPTU, but I was right. A ton of you, including that co-host of mine, who was a absent without leave co-host last week, because I think he knew that, you know, I was going to be talking about how Denver would win. He would try to convince me that I was wrong, as he normally does, and then I turn around and prove him right yet again. So we're going to talk about
him,
that.
Prove him right? Prove him right one again? Yeah, you're right.
No. That I was right again. So, yeah, yeah.
Hello. Hello, Mr. FSP. How are you today?
I'm welcome, Mr. Anything But Mr. FSP to you. See, you got hate in your heart. You've got hate in your heart, JT. You just do. You do. And it's okay. It's okay to be jealous. It's okay to want to be like me. I've been winning. You know, I don't have Charlie Sheen's issues, but I am winning, and you can't deny it. I've been on a hot winning streak.
Anything
but. It's okay. It is okay. All of us can't be winners. Some of us must be like you, a loser. But with that being said, we're also going to talk about the Chicago Bears, who I feel happens to be losing out on a great player, if all indications are true. And from what Matt Forte posted on his Facebook page, his Twitter page, he won't be coming back to Chicago because the Bears don't want to re-sign him. I'm quite sure Jerry has his thoughts on that. I have my thoughts on that. We're going to get to that also. Now that the Super Bowl is over, after we do this rehash show, next week we begin talking about baseball. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about this league I'm in. And there's some interesting moves going on. And I made an interesting move like first couple days into the league, and I'll tell you how that went down. But, of course, Jerry is going to tell you I'm not credible when it comes to baseball, and I will admit I am not the best at baseball, but as of late I have been getting better, and with what's going on in my fantasy sports life as of late, I think I'm going to win again this year. 2015 has been very, very good to me. Just like Sammy Sosa says, baseball has been very, very good to me. Without the PEDs, fantasy sports have been very, very good to me, Mr. FSP, to you. So, JT, you can't deny the facts.
Let me ask you something. Yes. Have you recently recently had any medical attention? have you recently had any medical attention?
No, but I've had a lot of strife.
No, the reason why I'm asking you that because I as much as you pat yourself on the back, you've got to have some serious bruising. So I'm wondering if you had medical attention to.
Oh my goodness. Now listen, it's okay when you have so many pats on the back to have. It's okay to get a little bruised. It's okay to get a little bruised.
You are you're just shameful. You're shameful.
No, I'm not.
God.
I have
you're
no shame.
Shame.
I have no shame right now.
That is obvious.
Well, listen, it's okay. Are you standing on the couch again? Are you standing on the couch again? Sit down. That's an inside joke, ladies and gentlemen. That is an inside joke. But it's okay. It's okay. I'm glad you like that. I'm about to call the old guy to have a heart attack. The old guy's about to have a heart attack.
That was pretty good. I like that.
So, let's break down this Super Bowl. Now, if you listen to last week's show.
Let's break it down. Carolina broke down. Let's break it down.
They sure did. They sure did. But if you listen to last week's abbreviated show, I did about a 20-25 minute show. Now, that was due to the fact that I was extremely tired. I had a lot of stuff going on that day. Not to mention that my co-host didn't show up. He had a reason. He was on, you know, involved with his wife, and it was a mandatory movie night, I guess, or afternoon, and he didn't make it. But it's okay because it gave me.
If you had a full show, I would have made it. But you cut the program short because
I told you I was extremely tired.
You were tired, literally. Now, tired. You're a tired. You're a tired
really,
man. I'm stressed out.
I'm stressed out by soldiers like you. But the bottom line is that
if I was one of your soldiers, you probably need psychological care because I would have been driving you nuts.
I already got one doing that to me. But
there's always one. You know that. There's always one.
Yeah,
always
dude. But
one.
This one, geez. The point is this, ladies and gentlemen. The point is this. The 20 to 25 minutes I did spend talking, I was right on the money. Right on the money. And if you listen to me and you put your money where my mouth was, you won two. The reason I say two is because I won $250. I took some of Jerry's weekly earned money.
That was sheer luck.
I admit it was. However, to have the two NFL players. Matter of fact, let me do this before I even get any further with this. I want to give a big shout out to Joe Holly and Garrett. What's Garrett's last name? I forgot Garrett's last name. Sorry, Garrett.
Wow.
Garrett of the.
Wow. That's how much you think of them. Wow.
Well, listen, I got a busy life, but Garrett of the new Los Angeles Rams, as well as Joe Howley, a.k.a. Hollywood, of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Matter of fact, next week I'm going to play an interview I did with those guys, and hopefully I have the piece where Garrett discusses his thoughts about Peyton Manning coming out to L.A. I don't know if you guys saw Jimmy Fallon when Magic tried to recruit Peyton just in case. But I had a good hour in the studio with those guys this past week or last week just before the Super Bowl, and we talked about it. And some of it was
Garrett
on air. Garrett Reynolds, thanks. And some of it was on air, some of it was off air, but it was a great conversation nonetheless. It's always good to get the perspective of a lineman, you know, interior or exterior lineman. So interior being center to guard, and then exterior being the tackles. And I pointed out that it was not just could come to L.A., but if when you hear this, it sounds like Garrett would really like him there, but can't say it. Because at the end, he kindly throws in he likes the guys that they have there. And that's, you know, just being a team player instead of saying, I would love that Peyton Manning over Foles and whoever else. You know, he plays the fence a little bit. But with that being said, let's get into this game. There are several things we talked about, or I talked about last week, that came true. Last week I talked about how the secondary of the Denver Broncos was going to be key to shutting down the Carolina Panthers offense. And how the front and how the front four of Denver was going to terrorize Cam Newton. People were like, oh no, they've been blowing people out. Yeah, they've been blowing people out, or they were blowing people out in the playoffs, mainly because those teams fell so far behind early and they didn't play them close that the offense had the element of surprise. Either we're going to run the ball or we're going to throw the ball. But when they played Denver, it became, well, we can't run the ball, so we have to throw the ball. And as you noticed, they couldn't run the ball with Jonathan Stewart. But when Artis Payne or Fozzie Whitaker were in the game, they made yards on the ground. Cam got a couple of yards running. But as I stated in the show last week, Artis Payne and Fozzie needed to be the focal points in order.
Let me school you something here, man. I hate to say it like this, but let me inform you of something. Cameron's Artis Payne was not on the field because he was inactive. It was only Mike Tolbert and Fozzie Whitaker.
And I understand that, but what I said was last week was that it needed to be Artis Payne or Fozzie who were the focal point of the run game. That's the point of it all, that Jonathan Stewart would not be a factor in this game. So the running production had to come from somewhere other than him. Now, I didn't count on him getting injured or anything like that, but forcing him with the ball in the middle was not going to work. Denver's interior defense, the nose tackle and the two tackles, along with Danny Trevathan, and Brandon Marshall in the middle was not going to work. It wasn't. It just wasn't. What they needed to do was do swing passes and run outside. Make Danny Trevathan cover a fast running back out of the backfield. And if you notice, that's the only time Carolina had success in the run game, when they went outside and throwing outside passes.
Well, let me put it this way, man. Okay? And this is the statistics that you're referring to. Carolina rushed for a total over 100 yards, 118 yards for a fact. 4.4 on average. So they were able to run the football out of 27 carries, even though Jonathan Stewart only had 12 of those carries. So, and they outgained Denver by quite a bit. They rushed for 118 yards, and Cam Newton threw for 197. Now, quite naturally, his percentage was down because he got sacked so many times and he fumbled the ball. But the bottom line is this. They out-yarded Denver. The only difference in the game was the turnovers. That was the only difference in the game.
No.
The only difference in the game was the turnovers.
Listen, Jerry, you're skewing the point that I'm making.
Hey,
I said
over 104 yards.
No, I didn't say I didn't go to Denver. I didn't go to Denver yet. The point that I was making is the production, and I said this, the production was successful when they ran on the outside, not on the interior. I already said that. I said Whitaker, he made several big plays going out on the exterior in the run game. I didn't say that Denver outperformed Carolina in the run game. No, I knew they didn't because CJ only had like 90 yards. So with Cam's total rushes along with – and Cam had, I think, a total like 40, 50 yards rushing or something like that along with
right.
Stewart's. I think Stewart had like 20 or less. But the rest came from Tolbert and Whitaker before Whitaker got the concussion. And all of that was on the outside. Tolbert got, what, two big runs up the middle. That is it. That is it. Everything else came from the outside, the exterior. That's my point in that. And that's what I was trying to tell everybody last week when I was breaking down the game. On four for Carolina. Now, I also said that Von Miller and or DeMarcus Ware was going to kill Michael Orr. I said it. Nobody had been talking about that matchup. Nobody that I listened
to.
Wait a minute.
The majority of the, if I'm not mistaken, mistakes that came from either Cam Newton fumble. I thought it was the right side. I thought he was eating up the right tackle, left or right.
He was eating up the right tackle, left or right. He did. However, okay, on the sack strip fumble for the touchdown, that came off the right end. Okay,
yep.
That came off the right end. The first sack by Vaughn that was a turnover came off the left end because Michael Orr missed him. DeMarcus Ware, both of DeMarcus Ware's, no, DeMarcus had 2.5 sacks, but both of those came off of Michael Orr. And then you had a couple come straight up the middle. So Khalil Mack and Michael Orr were getting abused along with the right tackle. But for the most part, most of the pressure came from the left. The reason why Von Miller was able to get that one-on-one action on the right was because they were trying to control DeMarcus Ware. So the points of what I said last week were that the defensive secondary of Denver would shut down that suddenly high-powered passing game of Carolina. You lose Philly Brown, I think, in the third quarter after he makes a great catch because I thought it was going to be intercepted between Ward and Tlaib. I thought it was going to be interception, but he makes a great catch, falls on his back, hits his head, gets a concussion. He's gone. So now you're relying on Funchess, Ginn, and Cotchery. Now, Ginn didn't get a ball until, like, the third quarter, and he got, like, what, 70 yards in the third quarter. But he also had a couple of drops that turned into interceptions.
Let me tell you something, man.
I'm
looking at the statistics right now, okay? Corey Brown, before he got up until the time he got hurt, he had 7 targets. You know who had the most targets in that game? Do you know who had the most?
It was probably Ted Ginn because in the third quarter, that's when he started catching the ball. That's what I. What are you trying to tell me? I already said this.
Ted Ginn had the most targets right behind Greg Olsen, who had 9.
I didn't say they didn't have the targets.
I understand that Cam Newton at one point in time had to keep throwing the football, and I keep on coming back to this fact. Now, the Carolina Panthers had 5 sacks. The Denver Broncos had 7 sacks. What I'm saying to you is they outgained them. They almost had the same amount of sacks as them. It came down to the turnovers, plain and simple. That's all.
Jerry.
It came to turnovers, and some of those were, I understand, some of them were pressure turnovers, like the couple that
tip balls.
Von Miller. But
I mean,
they outgained Denver horribly in this game, and the defense bailed them out. I understand what you're saying, but
no, you don't, because you're battling what I'm saying.
No, even though Carolina. Excuse me, was able to move the football on the ground. That's what I'm saying. You said wouldn't be able to, or they would have difficulty.
Unless they went on the outside, which was true. I mean, what are you trying to debate? All their yards happened on the outside.
What I'm saying is this. If Denver hadn't won the game, which quite naturally they did, and it's revisionist history, is if then one of the linemen, but quite naturally, what's his name now? Because I'm trying to bring him up now. Corey Ealy, I think his name.
Yes.
Tony Ealy, who had three sacks,
yes.
and was in the backfield of Denver constantly. It was all about turnovers, dumb turnovers. I mean, there was two. One that was went through the arms of, I think it was, Ted Ginn, that became an interception. Another, Mike Tolbert, he fumbled twice. One, they recovered, meaning Carolina, and the other one went to
Ward.
Yeah, to Denver. But it all came – and one that – I won't say turnover, but it was like a turnover when everybody I talked to said that was a catch – with Cotri, and that could have turned the game around right there. Could have been a different game.
That wasn't a catch.
Okay. Let me ask you something.
It wasn't.
The ball hit the ground
and came loose. That means the definition.
Ground.
Listen. When he hit the ground, the ball was on the ground, but his hand was in it. However, it cannot move. The ball did move. And that means, by definition, according to the NFL, it's not a catch.
You just said his hand was under
it hit the ground.
It couldn't hit the ground. The ball didn't hit the ground.
Jerry, he didn't catch the ball and cradle it with his forearm. The ball was more so like at perpendicular. It was a cross. Therefore, when he caught it, the tip of the ball hit the ground, causing it to move. Therefore, by definition,
I didn't see that.
You didn't. You weren't standing on the couch then. But the point
stop.
That I'm. But the
they,
ball.
They replayed it to ad nauseum. Even the referee that they have on all these games now. Even the referee, I forget his name off the top of my head. He said it was a catch. Even the referee that was watching the game along with the commentators that were calling, analysts that were calling the game, they went to him to get his opinion before they came back with a decision, said it was a catch. And then he come back and
not,
said, that was a catch, man.
No, it was – okay, first of all, your whole theory that you're trying to get to is like – whatever.
I'm not trying to get to What I'm saying is, this game was very even, extremely even, and pretty much
that contradicts what you just said. It contradicts what you said about the yardage.
Wait a minute!
Oh my goodness!
Wait a minute! You're not listening to what I'm saying. This game was extremely even because both teams were offsetting each other. The defense was turning over the Carolina Panthers and the and quite naturally putting in the Denver Broncos in in prime position to for easy points versus Carolina, keeping for the most part, even though they were on the field quite a bit, the Denver Broncos in check. Now, I know they scored 24 points, but I would say probably over half those points were gift points because they put them in such the Carolina's defense in such bad position that they you know you only can put your finger in a dam for so long before it breaks up, bursts. So and that's what happened. I gotta give it to you. The offense didn't win this game. The deep was all defense. And right, you're right. You called it that the defense would have to do certain things to slow the Broncos down, and they did that versus what the Carolina Panthers did not do.
Listen,
so, I mean, you're right. You're right.
I know that. Thank you very much. My back is getting a little bit more bruised. But all I wanted to point out was that the way that I called it prior to the game, it played out that way. Now, I don't care about the yardage differential. That matters not to me. The one thing that I did, I believe, I didn't miss it, but it just didn't come fully out, was Bebe had a horrible game. Josh Norman is good, but Bebe had a bunch of drops. And what I said was that the secondary of Carolina was no match for Denver's receivers. And to an extent, I was right. However, Bebe, I mean, I don't know. He got hit a couple times really good. He did. But a couple of those passes, he should have caught. Emmanuel Sanders, who is their number two, played like a number two, but he was the one that moved the ball when they needed to move the ball. Him or Owen Daniels and Green came in a few times. A big shout out to my Dunbar Crimson Tide alumni, Vernon Davis, for getting a Super Bowl ring. He had very little to do with the game, but he did play, and he was on the field. I can say that much. But
yeah, that's about it. He was on the field.
I know. But a key factor, here's the key factor in this game, and I've been saying it all football season long. Key factor, C.J. Anderson started the game, and C.J. Anderson, he kept chipping away and chipping away. He didn't have the big, big game. He got a nasty 90. That's what I call it, a nasty 90, meaning it wasn't big flashes. I think his longest run was like 13 yards. But the fact that they started him over Ronnie Hillman, who I've been saying all season long should not be the starter. They were serious, Denver. They were serious about running the ball.
No, that was no revelation. That's the only way they're going to. They had a chance of winning the football game is running the football and playing defense. Because Peyton Manning, JAG. JAG, just another guy.
Well, whatever the case may be, CJ put in work, and they punted a lot. Denver did. However, when they did move the ball, it was because CJ Anderson made it happen along with that offensive line. There were times that I figured, okay, they're going to try to eat clock, but they'll throw a screen. Nope. Hand off to CJ, he loses a couple yards. Hand off to Hillman, loses like 4 or 5 yards, whatever the case may be. I didn't see not one screen pass to the running back. I might have missed it because I was cooking breakfast for my soldiers, but I didn't see one screen pass from Denver in that game back.
Whoa.
What?
You glossed over that real quick.
What?
I, I didn't know your MOS was a cookie.
Oh, really? No. That's not what it is, and you stop playing with me. No, okay, let me explain this. So I have several single soldiers, and instead of them being in the barracks, I said, come to work, and we'll watch the game in the office, and we'll cook breakfast. So me and my operations manager, we cooked breakfast for them. We went ahead and, of course. So we made pancakes and scrambled eggs and sausages. And, oh, man, I forgot to bring out my homemade sausages. But I took homemade sausages to work and, you know, we grilled them up and scrambled eggs and onions and stuff like that. And so they were watching the game while I was cooking. So in one of the offices by the kitchen or by the break room, I was looking at it while everybody else was in the bullpen looking at the game. I had one of the coaches of my son's team came up with his son, and, you know, they just all hung out, watched the game, because they had – my DJs had to work, but everybody else didn't.
That was my question, and I gather they didn't want – they weren't able to watch the game because they had to work.
No. Our morning DJ only had to work 1 hour because then we started playing the Super Bowl over our airwaves. So all they had to do was just hit a button, then come sit down and, you know, and enjoy the rest of the Super Bowl. But my evening DJ didn't come in. She stayed wherever she was. And then when it was time for her to come in, she came in. But that's another story. Anyway, the bottom line is that I was enjoying the fact that everything I was saying was coming to pass. Now, before the game, one of my new soldiers, I call him DJ Baby J. He's 6'4", 6'5", former South Carolina Gamecock. He was on the basketball team, blew his knee out freshman year, but the young man still has his degree. He owns property or land. I ain't going to say property. Property is when you own like a half an acre or whatever. He owns land in South Carolina. Very well off. Chose to join the military because he wanted to do this in West. And he's learning. I got to mentor him and all that other stuff. But he's doing a pretty good job. So he wants to run his mouth. And I'm like, just like I told everybody on the show that Saturday, da-da-da-da is going to happen. And before I got to finish, he pulled a Jerry. He said, that logic sounds all and good, but what you putting on it? No, I said, listen to me.
Oh, man. No, listen, he didn't do that.
Yes, he did. I said he pulled a Jerry, ran his mouth, always talking, signifying nothing. But I said to him, look, I can't take your money. Can't do that. Because my son's coach is a lieutenant colonel. But he's a cool dude. He's a cool dude. And I said, look, man, if you listen to what I just told you, it's going to happen. He said, nope, Cam going to do this. Cam going to do that. The defense going to do that. I said, no, he's not. No, he's not. So finally, I said, all right, cool. You tell me what you want to do, and I'll go with you. So he said, okay, lunch for a week. I said, okay, are you sure you want to do that? He said, yeah. I said, all right, okay. So after that first quarter, I was like, do you see what's happening? Didn't I tell you this is going to happen? He's like, it's just the first quarter. And then Vaughn Miller gets that sack strip at the beginning of the second for the touchdown with Jackson. He's like, oh, man. Okay. Just the second quarter. And I was like, I was sitting there cooking. I was like, how you want your pancakes? With a little salt or a little humility? I was talking mad garbage. And a week before the game, my operations manager, he was like, let's bet a steak. And I was like, okay, sure. So all this week, I've been eating for free. Had my steak yesterday. It was I wanted my porterhouse, but because I had to go coach on a Thursday night when they do it, he conveniently forgot to get my porterhouse and ate his. So I had a New York strip yesterday, and I was like, this is nowhere near a porterhouse. You've really hurt my feelings, but it's okay. So Tuesday, my lunch will be another New York strip steak, but this time from my young DJ who wanted to run his mouth. So anyway, I've talked a whole bunch about how I was right about this Super Bowl, and Jerry seemed like he was being combative, as usual, and trying to say, you're right, but you were wrong. I mean, I know, Jerry. Y'all don't. It's okay. It's okay. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, Super Bowl 50 was a very interesting Super Bowl. My oldest daughter, well, you know what? Well, before we get to that, my oldest daughter said it was a boring Super Bowl.
I felt now, the same way.
What? Oh, yeah, wow. No, we're going to debate this. I didn't find it boring at all, because I enjoy both defensive games as well as high offense. Now, with all the talent defenses, there is no way in the world that could have been an offensive explosion on either side. When you have the number one and number three ranked defense in the NFL, if you think back to the last time Denver's in the Super Bowl, number one offense versus number one defense, which team prevailed? And it was the number one defense when they played Seattle. But the thing about that was their defense showed up completely along with their offense and special teams, whereas Denver's offense did not. And their defense was so stuck on their heels, they couldn't prove that they could be a good defense. But this game, both defenses showed up. I enjoyed a 0-0 first quarter, not only because I won $250, but because it was a defensive game. It was like, okay, you're not going to do nothing. You're not going to do nothing. We're not going to let you do squat. There were hits. Plays were being made. And sometimes you need that type of game in order to enjoy, a game. It doesn't always have to be a 40-something to 30-something game to enjoy it. Yes, for offense to sell tickets, sure. But if you want to win a championship, you have to bring a solid defense.
Well, in my opinion, it was a boring game, and it was a sloppy game, because you had so many sacks, you had so many turnovers in that game. And the fact is that neither offense, even though that Carolina outgained the Broncos, when they had opportunities, the ball got turned over. So they really couldn't get anything sustained. Or they got silly penalties to stall them at the most inopportune time.
I agree. I agree with those silly penalties.
So it was in my opinion, it was a very sloppy game on both sides. It showed the ineptitude, and quite naturally, the really ineptitude of the Denver offense, absolutely ineptitude of Denver's offense. Peyton Manning had 141 yards passing.
When has Peyton gone over? Listen, how many times did Peyton go over 200 yards during the season? Not very many. So what did you expect? Do you expect him to go over 200 yards in the Super Bowl in the biggest game of the season when he couldn't do it all season long?
What did
you expect?
I understand that. What I'm saying is both teams were really relied on their defense. And the offensive side of a ball, either the ineptitude of the Denver defense versus the silly mistakes, as in penalties or turnovers, that Carolina drop balls that contributed to, in my opinion, a very sloppy game.
I got to disagree with that, but hey, the thing is this. If Ted Ginn, did Greg Olsen have more than four catches in that game? I don't think he did, but.
Yes, he had four catches exactly.
Okay. Like I said, over. But, here's the deal. I know he didn't have over.
Cam Newton had one interception and two fumbles lost. Peyton Manning had one interception, and I think he had at least one, maybe two fumbles lost.
It was one.
No, but he had two fumbles. He had two fumbles, one
lost. Lost. I know. One loss. I mean, what do you – you know what?
Mike,
calm down.
I'm not excited. Mike Tolbert had two fumbles and one loss. So, you got three fumbles on Carolina, one fumble on the Denver, and each quarterback had two interceptions. And that's not even thinking about the sacks. So it was a very sloppy game.
No, that isn't a very sloppy game. If you're only looking at it from an offensive perspective, you're not looking at it from the defensive perspective. Somebody had to hit those guys in order for a fumble to happen. Somebody had to have it, had to be in the right place and play the right coverage to get the interceptions. And in a couple of those cases, there were tipped balls. Like, who would expect Ely dropping back in coverage to tip the ball to himself and get, you know, a very good return on his interception? Nobody. I mean, I think that was the first time they dropped him, because it's normally our boy, the DN that's like a cowboy, I forgot his name, Jared Allen. Normally Jared Allen is the one that does the zone blitzing. He'll do the drop back. But they switched it up. They put Ely there to do that, and he tipped the ball to himself and got an interception. I mean, Ted Ginn, as I said, he dropped a lot of passes, and one of which was a tip off of his hands where Cam zipped it to him perfectly. It was perfect. But Cam gets the interception because Ginn can't control the ball. And then T.J. Ward grabs the pick off of the off the tip. So it's not a sloppy game. The defense caused a lot of things to happen, making it a good defensive battle. But hey, it's my opinion versus your opinion.
I watched this game, and halfway through the second quarter, or maybe at halftime, just before halftime or just after halftime, I mentioned to my wife, who was watching it, and said, to me, this is a boring game, very sloppy game, because what I saw was, I saw two teams that, I'll say it again, the ineptitude of the Denver offense and the sloppiness of the Panthers offense, either dropping or dropping passes or fumbling the football, or like I said, penalties in the worst time, which really killed them. It was a sloppy game, in my opinion. I like watching football, but I've watched a lot of football. This is probably one of the worst football, one of the worst Super Bowls I've watched. Even the blowouts were more. Some of these blowouts were more exciting than this game. I understand.
Wow.
Two good defenses going against each other, but the offenses did nothing to help themselves in this game. It would seem like the only thing that really mattered in this game is how well the defenses could play, because the offenses really didn't show up on either side. They really did not show up.
I got to disagree. I think the Carolina offense did show up. They just got outplayed. But right now, I think this is Jeff calling from the 973 area code. Hopefully I'm right. If I'm not, well, we'll see who it is. Call from 973. Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. Please state your name.
This is Jeff.
I knew it was
Jeff.
Can
we all just get along? You know what?
No, because Jerry is a problem.
Right. You're both right. It was a defensive game. It was also a sloppy game. You're both right. And believe me, I've seen much worse Super Bowls. One of the worst, this is going back like 20 years, was the 49ers-Chargers Super Bowl, where the only thing I remember about the second half, it was such a blowout, was shooting pool. I mean, it was one of the greatest Super Bowl parties ever. That's what I remember about that game. And there have been, I think, Jerry, you're being a little short-sighted if you think that's one of the worst Super Bowls. It wasn't one of the better ones.
Exactly.
It was one of the worst. And I'm glad, I mean, he didn't have much chance of getting it, but, you know, the Super Bowl MVP, which is a huge award. I mean, Super Bowl MVP is much better than the regular season MVP, because who remembers all the regular season MVPs? And if Von Miller hadn't been so dominant, if it was more of a team effort, and believe me, that Denver defense is up there with the top defenses of all time. I mean, they're that good. And you have to factor in, this is such a high-scoring era. And they really, they had some good players. They brought in some guys. That's a top-notch unit. It reminded me, this Super Bowl was a little before my time. I've only seen the highlights. A Super Bowl V, and that game was defensive game, a sloppy game, a defensive MVP, which we've had two of the past 3 years in Super Bowl, which is not common. And that was the only Super Bowl where the MVP played on the losing team, because there wasn't a real standout player on the Colts. I mean, they almost should have given it to the kicker, but I guess, you know, all he did was, you know, kick the game-winning field goal. But, you know, it kind of had me thinking of that classic Super Bowl V, which also was Johnny Unitas close to retirement. And he had to leave that game, which is almost unheard of for him. But they got him in the ribs, and that the rib pain is tough. That's hard to work with, you know. It got me thinking a little of Super Bowl V. But it wasn't that bad of a game. And it's almost like, you know, two defensive fighters almost, you know, a little sloppy, but not the sloppiest game ever.
I agree with you, Jeff. Of course, thank you. Sometimes you're the voice of reason, and I needed someone in here to stop this old man from standing on the couch, beating on his soapbox about how bad he is.
Well, you know, I like Jerry, because not for him, then I'd be the old guy. So I like Jerry so much. So
I love him too. He gets on my nerves, though.
I'll tell you though, Peyton Manning. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, star athletes, when they show class, it's an act. And I can't believe after the game, this is probably one of the biggest moments in his entire life, and this is a life filled with big moments. He pushes Budweiser twice?
Hey.
What a low-class piece of dirt. He does that.
He was trying to get an endorsement, because Budweiser is not one of his endorsers, one of his sponsors.
Well, no, he owns a couple of distributorships. Even so, that's just so low-class. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had that many microphones in my face. But when I had my bar mitzvah, I wasn't telling people to eat at Rutz Hot, you know. You gotta show a little class, even if you gotta fake it. And you know, active players, which technically he still is, are not supposed to endorse beer. And that's one of the reasons
that
beer companies,
that is true.
They like to reach out. They like to get a guy as soon as he retires, so this way it doesn't look like all the guys on their commercials are old men. And believe me, I thought that was worse than Cam Newton with the hood on at the press conference. And my thing is with Cam, I mean, I don't care for the celebration, but it doesn't bother me. But I think if you're going to celebrate and play with that kind of, you know, flair, that kind of flavor, whatever you want to call it, just do it. Don't apologize. Don't talk about it. Just effing do it. And if you can't take the criticism, then just hand the ball to the ref. Just play the damn game, you know? Because I got no problem with it, with his celebration, but, like, just play the game and quit apologizing. Quit talking about it. Just play, man. Ridiculous.
Well, you know what? On the other vein is the way he handled it after the game.
If you want to celebrate,
you celebrate and fine, and you'd like to have fun. That's fine, all fine and dandy. You're gonna have to deal with the criticism because there's always gonna be some haters out there. But in the opposite side, if you're going to get beat or you're gonna lose a game, then you gotta face the music just as well, and not, in my opinion, pout deal with. The media, the way he handled it, which was totally like a and this is ironic because I watched this on Mike and Mike on ESPN a few days ago. Chad Johnson, this is a hell of a pair. Chad Johnson and Terrell Owens were on Mike and Mike, and they were also on First Take. The question that they were asked, what did you think about Cam Newton and his press conference after the Super Bowl? And I guess Mike and Mike were looking for other than what they absolutely said. Unprofessional. Both of them said the same thing. It was very unprofessional. He should have handled it a hell of a lot better than that. And those are some two guys that were pretty controversial when they played in their antics on and off the field. So especially Johnson on the field and Owens on the field, not so much Terrell off the field. So, if they said it was pretty unprofessional, then you got to think that what Cam did, regardless of who was next to him, regardless if he could overhear another team, the opposite team, raving about what they needed to stop him, he's got to be able to handle it. He's a grown-ass man, 26 years old, been in the league for 5 years, and had his share of losing. You can't do what you did.
I got it. But see, here's the deal. Here's the deal, fellas. I didn't want to get on this topic because I have a different view. But the thing I feel is important to understand is two things, and I agree with what Chris Harris said. The NFL messed up. The NFL put Denver Bronco players in between Carolina players for the post game. So you kind of put the player in that position. Now, Luke Kuechly, he handled it the way everybody thinks that it should have been handled. He answered the questions. He sat there. He didn't seem upset. He didn't seem – that's fine. Cam Newton, we knew this from the day he joined the NFL. Year one, people are saying – he doesn't know how to be a professional, blah, 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 blah. And now those same people are on his jock saying he's the best thing since sliced bread. And then he comes out and has a poor performance in the Super Bowl. And to his credit, a lot of these analysts said it wasn't his fault completely. It was a total team loss. Now, if you couple that with the fact prior to this game, he said he hasn't changed. He didn't conform to anyone for any reason. So the fact that he says this and reiterates this all week leading up to the Super Bowl, and it just so happens he loses, did we expect him to all of a sudden to become magnanimous during the press conference when all the time in his past history he behaved the same way? Now I get it. He's in a new stratosphere of quarterbacks. He's no longer the mid-card guy, so to speak. He's now a main eventer. And I said this to my guys while we were watching the game. Next year, when Kelvin Benjamin returns, if they fix their line, Carolina will be back in the Super Bowl. Because now he has an additional sure-handed target to throw the ball to. So, Cam Newton's attitude, I get it. It's there. He's not changing. The owner doesn't say you got to change. He just said don't get tattoos. Don't get tatted up. Cool. He didn't say change who you are. Ron Rivera, he says, yeah, I wish that he would have handled it differently. However, comma, that's the way Cam is. And we accept that, and that's our leader. And you guys don't see what he does during practice, after practice, in the community, and all that. You take a snapshot of who he is when he's down and make him that person. And that's the thing. That's what the media and analysts do. However, the thing is, to be honest, and this is why I didn't want to talk about it because I didn't want to go too deep into it, but to be honest, I couldn't say I would react any differently. And I'm a very, as you guys know, extremely competitive individual. And I would probably, if you ask me a close-ended question, they ask Cam, I would give yes and no answers too. I'm not going to elaborate. I don't want to be there. I just lost the biggest game of my career. I didn't play well. You're going to ask me a close-ended question? You're going to get a yes or no answer. So, and yes, I'm hearing my competitor just a booth over being answering the question on how they were going to shut me down and stuff like that. Couple that in with all my frustration, I'd rather walk off and you know, not deal with it as opposed to getting fined or opposed to continuing getting asked the same question just differently, answered it. Just because I didn't answer the way you liked it doesn't mean I'm going to change my answer when you answer it a different – when you ask it a different way. So, again, I probably would have reacted the same way regardless of the stature I have, because we can go back, and this is the last thing I want to talk about on this. We can go back to when Peyton walked off the field, didn't even shake Drew Brees' hand, didn't even meet him at the 50-yard line of the Super Bowl to shake his hand. Jeff just pointed out, you're not supposed to talk about alcohol. Peyton talks about it twice in two interviews, didn't get a slap on the wrist, but he violates the rule. So let's not focus in on how classy or classless Cam was, because we knew that's who he was from times past. Unprofessional, whatever. Let's not focus in on that, because we knew that's who he was to begin with. A leopard doesn't change his spots.
Well, you talk about a snapshot, but his snapshots have been a full-length video, man. This is nothing new that Cam Newton.
Exactly. Exactly. So why we talk about it?
But it's a video that you don't expect to see, especially from a quarterback. Especially from somebody that the MVP of the league, especially when supposedly Cam is taking that next step to being a top tier quarterback, you don't expect that. Even though he said I've changed, you know, you can change, but I haven't changed. I put it this way: I haven't changed. You can not change and change some other ways, but his pouty ways, that's not what you expect out of a professional athlete, especially a quarterback, that a lot of people, and I'm talking, when I say people, I'm talking about kids that look up to these athletes, that idolize Cam Newton, that get balls from Cam Newton and see him pout. That's not the type that you want to see.
Now, I can agree with that for the example for the kids. I can understand that. And last thing, we're talking about this because we got to talk about Forte in baseball, but I was coaching a game today, assistant coaching a game today, and a player, we already knew, he got ejected in the previous game because he was so pouty and so demonstrative that he got ejected in the previous game, and he's their best player. Now, these are 13-year-olds now. A 13-year-old getting ejected and known throughout this league as someone that has an attitude problem at 13 years old. So on mm-hmm. that front, I can agree with you as far as being an example for the kids in a losing moment. Now, I will never debate because, yes, kids probably look up to him in a way that nobody else does, and to see that could send the wrong message to them. However, it's better than having Rosenhaus on your front lawn saying next question. It's better than having cameras in your face doing sit-ups or getting kicked out of practice and sent home and showboating. It's better than having a Hall of Fame jersey or jacket on the sideline when you haven't been that good in your career to have a Hall of Fame jersey or jacket. So, you know, I can agree with you, JT. I can agree with you. I can agree, but I'm not going to
– Two different
I'm
animals.
Not going to go too deep. I got it.
Wait a minute.
But
You globbed T.O. and Chad Johnson T.O. and Chad Johnson into one category. When they're two different guys.
Not one category. We're talking about antics. That's what we're talking about. And those antics were way worse than Cam's. So with that being said, if you're gonna tell me him walking off is just as bad as what those guys did, come on now.
Speaking of a Hall of Fame, Chad Johnson is eligible for the Hall of Fame next year.
Chad Johnson will not get in the Hall of Fame next year. Anytime.
I'm just saying he's eligible to
go
to Hall of Fame next year, and it's a possibility that he'll be put on there somewhere, but he's eligible for the Hall of Fame next year.
But here's the deal. He won't make finalist when you still got T.O., you still got Torrey Holt, you still got Isaac Bruce ahead of him. He is not anywhere near the caliber of player that those three men were. He was a big impact for Cincinnati, got it. But compared to the impact Terrell Owens had on the four teams he played with, compared to Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt having the impacts that they had, he will not see the light of day of the hall until all three of those guys are in there. He shouldn't, in my opinion. He's not even better than Henry Ellard was. And I like Chad. I like Chad, but his numbers come in a era of football where they started swiftly moving to the pass. And in that time frame, Isaac Bruce, Terrell Owens, and Torrey Holt outperformed him on a consistent basis. So, I mean, he could be eligible all day on the field, and then headbutting that woman. I got it. And headbutting your wife off the field, getting a divorce, being a spousal abuser. Yeah, good luck with that.
Wait a minute.
Ask Ray Rice what happened.
Whoa. If that's the case, why is Marvin Harrison in the Hall of Fame when he was accused of a double murder?
Marvin Harrison was a difference between being accused and admitting to.
Listen to what I'm saying. Let me finish what I'm saying. What's the difference between Marvin Harrison being somewhat tied to two murders versus Terrell Owens, who has never, ever been in trouble off the field? And he's got better numbers than Marvin Harrison.
Okay, I never said that.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Marvin Harrison, you know what they say, it's the quiet ones you got to look out for. But I don't want to make a joke because those are serious accusations. I thought it was just two shootings, not two murders, which is a difference. And, you know, it's not funny, but me and my buddy used to call him, after I called him Machine Gun Marvin Harrison. He caught a break when that happened because when that happened, the city of Philadelphia issued a statement that there had been a bank robbery in that area around the same time. That's my theme music. You dig it? And
there it goes.
That, those are like the sounds of nature in the barrio. That there had been this bank robbery in the same neighborhood, and a cop had been killed, and because of that, their focus was on that and not the alleged Marvin Harrison shooting. And I remember thinking to myself, damn, this is Philadelphia. This is a major city. What, they can't do two big investigations at the same time? That just blew my mind. I just brought it up, and it's too much to read. So I guess they didn't have enough to charge him, you know, and that's what happens sometimes, you know. Witnesses don't want to talk or whatever, and there's a lot of things. And now I was just thinking of this recently because of the thing with LeSean McCoy in Philly. And, you know, I think the thing with LeSean McCoy, if off-duty cops weren't involved, nobody would give it to us, you know. But I'll tell you, the investigation with Harrison, you know, I'm from the New York area, and the perception of Philly in the New York area is not good. You know, Philly is considered like the farm team, and in many ways, and the Philadelphia Police Department, after that, I was thinking, man, these are some small-time cats, you know. But, you know, what about, you know, hey, O.J. Simpson, look what he did. You know, it's a loophole. He gets off in the
allegedly
criminal court, but he gets busted in the civil court, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Go figure. And now he's in jail for shot.
He got
injured
and
he's still
in the
Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Well,
he got
listen,
inducted to the Hall of Fame before the fact.
Way before the fact, and he was acquitted because it didn't fit. They had to acquit. However, that didn't stop the feds for going after him. But let's move on, fellas. Let's move on. We went down a path I really didn't want to go down, but I'm glad we had the conversation because perception is what people are looking at nowadays. And it is what it is. And the perception of the Chicago Bears is that they're going young, gifted, and without Matt Forte.
Cheap.
Cheap. Matt Forte had tweeted that his time in Chicago is over, even though he wanted to re-sign. The Bears have said they're not going to re-sign him. And I think last season or the middle of the season, we had talked about this. We talked about how John Fox was going to clean house. He's going to clean house, and Forte will probably be gone along with Alshon Jeffries and maybe some of the high-priced offensive linemen that have not performed. So with that being said, also the defense is going to get shifted to a 3-4. So Matt Forte leaves Chicago. He's, what, 30, 31, something like that? Where does he go? Okay, 30. Where does he go, and can he still have an impact? I caution you by saying, look at D'Angelo Williams. Just look at what he did in a backup capacity in Pittsburgh before you answer the question. I'm going to go to Jeff first, then Jerry.
I'll tell you, with Forte, it's not his age. It's the mileage. It's kind of like buying one of these pickup truck, something like that. You know, it's the mileage. He's got a lot of mileage. You know, he probably, I don't know if he'd still be an every down back for a 16 game season, but I think he could definitely contribute, especially in the passing game. So I think if a team, you know, if they have a lead back who isn't a good receiver, then Forte might be a great pickup for a team like that.
JT?
Unfortunately, this shapes up to be a back that a team that a lot of people in the NFL do not like. and I'm talking about the New England Patriots. This is the type of back that's a versatile back that can run the football, still be effective running the football, even though he's an older back, that they can get him for a good price, probably for $4 million or less. And he can also catch the ball quite naturally. We all know that, out of the backfield, because this is primarily a passing offense in New England. So, in my opinion, one of the best spots for him to land, and with a shot for him to win, to get in playoffs and possibly win a Super Bowl, a ring, would be a landing spot, would be someplace like New England. I still think he's got a little left. I don't know how much, but he was too expensive for Chicago's taste, especially when they had Jeremy Langford pop on the scene when Forte was hurt during the season and played well. So I guess the Grips are probably going to go with Langford and bring in somebody else to back up Langford, or have what John Fox likes to do, two backs versus just one main back. Those two backs are cheaper than Matt Forte. And let Matt Forte take his wares on the free market. And like I said, I think probably the best spot for him, unfortunately, would be in the New England area for the New England Patriots.
I have a couple of different landing spots that make a lot more sense than New England, because I think they're happy with White and the other guy, and LeGarrette. I think that would
really?
Be – I think so. But here's where I think he could go.
Before you go that route, I want to know why you think that, because look what they did against Denver. They didn't even try to run the football. They were passing hold it because they really didn't have someone to run the football that they could count on.
I got you, but here's the thing: for the price that they would pay Forte, he would have to be a feature back, and he's not going to be. It's going to be LeGarrette Blount, and you know Steven Jackson came along for the ride. He's done, but the scat back is not. I mean, that's what Forte can be perceived as. But he can run through the tackles. He can, as well as outside, and be a receiving threat. With that being said,
that's better than having. Before we go, that's better than having. It'll confuse the defense if you have Matt Forte in, because he's a versatile back versus James White. You know, he's mainly going to be catching the football. Or LeGarrette Blount, who's going to be mainly running the football. And Steven Jackson is going to be making football. You pigeonhole yourself into what your offense is.
No. No, you don't. That's what Belichick does. You never draft a Belichick running back in fantasy because you don't know what production you're going to get. And that's why Forte would not be a good fit there, not just fantasy-wise, but because you don't know what you're going to get with him. And to be honest, I'm going to be quite honest, New England's on the way. And I know I've been saying it for the past 3 years. I know. I strongly believe they're on their way down. But the places I see Forte going, actually playing and having a big impact, I see him in San Francisco. Carlos Hyde is a banger. He's a banger, but he's not healthy. And Chip Kelly wants a back that can run through the tackles as well as outside and catch the ball. You do not currently have that in San Francisco. You don't. Reggie Bush is not the answer. Okay? So that's one of the landing spots. I definitely see him going, starting, and being productive. Second place, San Diego. Melvin Gordon, without a strong offensive line, is a wasted high draft pick. Anytime you can let Brandon Oliver, take the job from you, pretty much because you're unproven and you don't know what you're doing by week 5 before he gets injured and goes on IR, and Danny Woodhead come in and be your feature back, you're not going to last long in the NFL at running back. I understand they invested a high draft pick in him, but I wouldn't bank on him being a part of the equation, especially with that offensive line. So I see Forte going there. And the last place might not be the last place, but one of the last places I see him going is New Orleans. C.J. Spiller was a big mistake for them this year. Couldn't stay on the field. But he's the same type of back as Forte, except Forte is better. Forte picks up the blitzer. Forte, as we said, 4-2 player. He can do it all. Well, but that's a place I can see him flourishing in.
I'm going to have to discount New Orleans because they are cap deficient. Let me put it that way. And they're having problems with their cap, and they have to try to get well under the cap before they can really do any be effective and garner any players. That was their problem this past year, and they're going to suffer for maybe a couple more years before they can get their cap issue straightened out. So Forte to New Orleans, that one I really can't see. The other one's a possibility, but you pick probably one of the worst teams with a cap issue.
But there with several situations there, Drew can restructure. Because Benson already said he's not going anywhere. They're going to keep him there for the remainder of his contract. He can restructure. He's made a lot of money. If he wants to win again, they already traded away Jimmy Graham. And Jimmy's a free agent, so Jimmy can come back there if he wants and take less money to be with Drew. What's my man name? You got did I just lose you guys?
I'm here.
I'm
okay.
Still here.
You okay.
Lost your thought.
No, because the sound went out. I had to hit a button. But my man Jimmy could come back, take less money to rejoin him. Marquise Colston is probably going to have to take a pay cut. Max Unger isn't there. Yes, he is. Max Unger is there. He'll have to take a pay cut and a few others. But it's doable. Now, they're going to cut C.J. Spiller. So there's some money there and some other players. Their defensive players are definitely going to get cut or they're going to have to take pay cuts because they were the worst defense in the NFL. So I can see them landing there. I mean, it's just anything is workable, anything. But with about roughly 10 minutes left, I want to talk about baseball because it's that time of year. And I know Nana. What?
Baseball been very, very good to me.
Well, it was good to me. Now, here's the deal. And I know, Jeff, I know you like baseball a little bit, so we're going to talk about it too. But
very little. Very little.
I know. But I joined a 20-team fantasy league. Now, this team finished 15th last year, but I'm going to run down the lineup. The key is you have to have 5 keepers. You don't necessarily have to keep 5, but you're allowed 5 keepers. Now, here's what I had. Notice I said had. We haven't drafted yet, but it's coming. I had Jose Altuve, Kyle Seager, Josh Riddick, Billy Burns, Wilson Ramos, Yulny Escobar, Yandrivis Solitre, Mark Canha, Eddie Rosario, Angel Pagan, Justin Morneau, Jed Lowry, my pitchers, Trevor Rosenthal, Jeff Samardzija, Mike Leake, Edison Valquez, Eduardo Rodriguez, Wade Miley, Chris Young, Kelvin Herrera, Drew Pomerantz, Zach Duke, Jason Vargas, and Tom Collier. Now, what I did... Because I noticed I only have one real valuable player. I traded Altuve for Chris Sale and Archer, and Chris Archer, and a draft pick, a higher draft pick. So Altuve and a decent draft pick for those guys. I also traded away a couple of draft picks to move up in an early round and fall back a little bit in a later round. Now, right now, My keepers are Archer, Sale, Rosenthal, and Valquez. The reason why I'm keeping pitchers as opposed to my bats, because I was thinking about Kyle Seager. I was thinking about him, but I was like, I can find a decent third baseman because these guys, they're focused solely on their bats. And I get it. You're saying a pitcher's only going to get you a day, maybe 2 days worth of work, and a bat's going to get you 5 to 7. However, in a 20-team league, and you got to start, 7 pitchers? The value for me, because pitchers are, the good pitchers, let me put it that way, are not that many in the league now or coming up. The value for me is in the pitcher. Now, I can find a bat to get me average. I can find a bat that can steal bases. You know, but the categories for the pitcher are innings pitch, wins, saves, strikes, holds, ERA, whip, and quality starts. Right? So with the pitchers I've selected, I've got the best save guy in the business right now with Trevor Rosenthal on St. Louis. I've got high strikeouts with Archer and Sales, but Sales, he didn't finish the season too well last year, and I'm trying to move him for Cespedes and or Encarnacion. My bats, the categories for bats are not that bad. I mean, you have hits at bat, runs, hits, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, average, and on-base percentage. Now, some of the players that are already going to be on the free agent market when we draft, I'm probably going to be the only guy that drafts in the 5th round because I'm only keeping 4. Everybody else is declaring 5. So Prince Fielder is going to be there. Somebody's thinking about dropping Miguel Cabrera. Somebody's thinking about dropping Evan Gattis. Power there. Maybe not the average, but power there. And a couple other decent bats that are out there that will be there for me to pick. So while guys are trying to find pitchers, I'm loading up on bats and getting and filling in the rest of my rotation. Because I got 3 starting pitchers and 1 closer. All I got to do is get another closer. Go ahead.
Give me those pitchers again. I know Sale and Archer.
The ones that I'm going to keep. Yeah. Rosenthal is my closer, and Edison Valquez, Kansas City.
Oh, I like it.
With low ERAs.
He's too volatile. I don't like Edison Valquez. I like the other two, Sale and Archer. I'm a big Archer fan. I really like Chris Archer. Because he's high strikeout, and I think
and
he's
wins.
Getting better.
Yeah,
he's getting better and better each year. So I really like Chris Archer. Sale, he's high strikeouts. He's on a team that is
can't
not too
win.
Good. Yeah,
I know.
So his wins may not add up. Yeah, if I was you, I would try to move him.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah,
out of Cespedes or Encarnacion.
Yeah, you may not get an Encarnacion. Encarnacion is pretty.
Oh, no, no. I got a deal in place. Dude wants straight up Sale for Encarnacion, and I'm like, nah, I need another pick, or I need a different player to go with him because
what?
Listen, we were talking about swapping draft picks in the deal. And I'm like, okay, I'm willing to fall back 1 round behind the draft pick I give you. But he's like, no, I need you to take this one, which is like 2 or 3 rounds. I'm like, no, can't do it. I understand that Encarnacion might be a top 10 player. But if
yeah, he is.
Listen, as I said, I know he's a top 10 player. However, if you want Sale that bad that you're willing to go straight up, That gives me leverage that you're willing to do that. He was willing to do Cespedes and Morales for sale alone. And I said, okay, well, you know what? Maybe we can do something. So he's going to now trade Cespedes for Encarnacion and then trade me Encarnacion for sale and a pick. So we're trying to work it out. But in a 20-team league, and I know Jeff isn't a big baseball guy, so I want to get what he says first, just on my logic. And then, Jerry, I'll let you do it. We only got 3 minutes left of live air, but this can go in overtime for a little bit. But I want to hear your thoughts, Jeff and JT. Go ahead, Jeff.
You know, it's really tough because I'm not quite sure how these baseball fantasy leagues work. It sounds like, you know, you're reading the fine print trying to figure out what angles to work for this league, because that's huge, because every league is different. Even if it's only a little different, that could go a long way. I think, and you probably already looked into this, you know, the big news in New York is everybody's talking about that Mets pitcher who got busted for PEDs for the third time. Needless to say, avoid those kind of guys.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
But in baseball, I think in fantasy, it's very relevant of who's in a contract year. Because in football, they don't have guaranteed money, so it's not as important. Once in a while, there'll be a big-name guy in a contract year. But baseball, I think it becomes a lot more relevant of who's in a contract year. And once in a while, a player who's a little above average will really bust out when he's in the last year of a deal. That's something I'd want to keep an eye on. And even if it's only, you know, one or two guys you get like that, that one or two guy could be huge for you. So, I'm not that familiar on how baseball fantasy works. I mean, I just was thinking today, you know, this is the part of the year I hate. NFL is done, and I wish somebody would bring back the USFL or improve the Arena League. Because football's my sport, you know. When I was a kid growing up, I watched baseball. I still watch some basketball. This time of year is when I watch some pro hoops. But I lost all interest in baseball many years ago. As that game got longer and more boring and more specialized, my attention span shrunk, and it keeps getting worse and worse. So I don't have the time or patience for baseball anymore.
That's all right. JT, you got 1 minute.
I like Encarnacion, man. For sale, that if he was going to do that, I would do that in a heartbeat. There's always some pitchers out there that you can pick up. Even in a 20-team league, there's always pitchers that you can pick up. But bats, major bats, top 10 bats, in a 20-team league, you can't pick that up. You can't.
Yeah, I agree.
Very rare. So, if the guy wanted to give me an everyday player for a pitcher that is on a losing team, even though he's a high strikeout guy, and maybe, but he's a fragile guy because he's not a big frame guy. I would have a hard time not taking that deal. If I had to go with a lower pick, I would take that Encarnacion sale deal in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. Without a shadow of a doubt.
He's gotta make the deal for Cespedes Encarnacion. He's got it locked down. So we'll see what happens, but we'll see. Ladies and gentlemen, we're in overtime right now. I want to thank you all for listening to the program. Jerry ended just as we went into overtime. With that being said, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program. We try to have some entertaining conversation as well as informative conversation, and I think we did that today. I want to thank my longtime guest or co-host. I'm talking about Jeff the Joker and my ace Boone Coon, the guy that I usually put the toilet paper in, which is my right hand. That's right, Jerry Taylor.
I love from you, man.
Oh yeah, I got some toilet paper for you too, buddy. I want to thank my guys for showing up and showing out. If you go to Facebook and you look me up, my wife recorded me doing Uptown Funk on Rock Band, the men versus the women. And for the first time ever, the men have beat the women. And the women are sore losers. They are Jerry's because they claim.
No, listen.
They claim because we did digital games or whatever that it wasn't a real victory. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's how they play. They don't want to give credit where credit's due. And the women outnumbered the men. We had to get my oldest son to play with us, and he did well. You know, he got to play with the men and represent the men. So I got to give love to him and everybody that came over. I had a game night for all of the my station, whereas, you know, we brought the families over and we all hung out and, you know, do some team building type stuff and family bonding. It was a good time, but I want to thank you two for being a part of my extended family. I always can count on you for something. Jeff, I can count on you to be there when I need you. Jerry, I can count on you to give me a hard time just because you want to, but you're still my ace and you still got my toilet paper. So with that being said, you want to say anything before we go, Jeff?
I'm glad I listened and I'm glad I called in, and best wishes to everyone.
All right, JT, what you got going on tomorrow?
I got some fantasy baseball going on. I'll be talking about up and coming pitchers and catchers. I think they start next week, and talking about the baseball season and maybe some thoughts that I didn't relay here on the Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to talk about baseball, and Jerry will probably repeat those pitchers and catchers on the show, as he has the outfielders, pitchers and catchers. I have first baseman, second base, shortstop, and third base. Are you doing relief pitchers as well, Jerry, or did we say you weren't going to touch relief pitchers?
I'm not doing relief.
Okay, so I might touch on relief pitchers. We'll see what happens in that area. With that being said, I want to thank everybody for listening to Fantasy Sports Politics Saturday edition. Check out tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, The Master Plan with JT, ATM Money. I might even call in since President's Day. Well, my Monday is your Sunday, so I might be able to call in. I want to thank everybody for having – and if you listened to me this season – fantasy season, football season.
Here we go.
You were a winner. What? What? I just said,
go.
If you listen to me,
here we go.
Unlike Jerry,
just get some
extra
padding. Just get some extra padding on your back, man.
Hey, four titles don't lie. And as I said, I want to thank all my fantasy people for paying for my trip to China. Yeah, thank y'all. And the belt looks good on my shoulder and my waist. Yeah.
Just don't try to fit it on your head because it's too big for that.
Right now it is. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.